Proverbs chapter 11 is a proverb that actually, the proverbs that actually emphasize, in many respects, integrity in word and in deed. Now again, there's a lot of repeat in the Proverbs, going back and forth and mentioning the same thing in different ways. So we're going to come across a lot of these things continuously. Things about the tongue, things about, you know, dealings with people. And here in 11, there's a lot of emphasis on integrity in the things you say, honesty and being right, and also indeed the way you treat people. Let's jump in and see what the Lord has for us. He says, dishonest scales are an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is His delight. Now, we don't use scales in the same sense, unless you go to the deli and you're going to get, you know, a pound of gabagool. You're going to put that on there, or you're going to get something in that respect. But in those days, everything was measured. Their money was measured by weights. You had certain stones that were used. In fact, archaeologists have dug up stones with the name shekels on them. And they all varied in weights. They weren't exactly the same. It's quite interesting because the differing weights and dishonest scales or differing weights was a thing that God hated because He wanted a standard there. In philosophy, this would be known as what is called pure lying. In other words, if you went to the deli and you say, I want a couple of pounds of salami, and he puts on the scale 2 pounds and a quarter, but only charges you for 2 pounds. You think, wow, what a nice guy, what a generous man. But what you may not know is his scale is changed so that actually you're only getting 1 pound and 3 quarters. But he's making you think he's giving you more. That's what a pure lie would be. It's a lie cloaked with rightness, a pretense of honesty. And that's exactly what this is. Now notice, he says it's not just something that is wrong, it's an abomination to the Lord. One of the few things that the Lord calls an abomination, lying, dishonesty, is one of them. You know, we're supposed to have honest scales. We're supposed to do unto others as we would want them to do to us. And when you come to lying of this nature, it really goes back to the very beginning with Satan. He's the father of lies. You know, and this is the problem. In fact, in society, if you took away all the lies, if we'd obey that one command, how different society would be. How changed everything would be. I've often quipped, you could do away with all the lawyers. You wouldn't need them because people would have to be honest. And they'd speak the truth. You'd never have to get the contract and sign the name and then have to take them to court because they didn't keep their word. And it would just be your word is your bond. And people would be honest. You'd always know where you stand with people. What a different place society would be. An abomination to the Lord are dishonest scales. But a just weight is His delight. A just weight. It's a delight. Now, it's a delight or abomination. Depends on honesty. You can be a delight or you can be abomination. In verse 2, he talks about humility and pride. When pride comes, then comes shame, but with the humble is wisdom. Pride always goes before the fall, the Bible tells us. Always goes before tragedy. Always goes before, you know, stumbling. Pride is the thing that it blinds us and we can't see where we're going. So naturally, we're going to fall into that trap. I think of the pride that I had in my senior year in high school, how arrogant I was in my wrestling ability and how I judged everything in that respect. And I was so full of myself. And I thank the Lord that I had a grandmother praying for me. And through my folly and my decisions and the choices I made, I ended up getting sick. And, you know, with mono, I didn't have the strength. And seeded number one in the state of Michigan in wrestling, I ended up taking fourth. Simply because I've got weakened. And it all goes back to those decisions I made because I was so full of myself. It went before the fall. Now I thank the Lord I had my grandmother praying for me because through that fall, the Lord humbled me so that my eyes could be opened to Him. And it was through that difficult time in my life that I kind of got humbled and became more aware of what the Lord wanted to do in my life. I thank God for losing in that state me. But you know what? Humility is so important. Pride is the native sin. It's the sin which caused the angels to fall. Got Satan lifted up. I will ascend to the heights of the heavens. I will sit at the sides of the north in the congregation of the people of God. I will be like the Most High God. You know, and it seems like the whole New Age movement is thrusting people into that same lie to say to themselves, I am God. I am the captain of my fate. I'm the master of my soul. I can do what I want to do. And we don't realize how blind that makes us, because eventually that will lead us to shame. When you look at Miriam, how she was proud and looking at, why is Moses, you know, got all the honor and the leadership here? You know, what makes him so special? And she got leprosy because of her comments. The shame came. When you look at Uzziah, same thing happened to him. He was a king. God used him, a great king, did many mighty things, but he got lifted up in pride and intruded into the things of God that he shouldn't have been, and he got leprosy. You know, when I think of what Jesus said, just simple advice for us. We ought not to choose the higher seat, but choose the lower seat. He says in Luke 14, when you're invited by anyone to a wedding feast, don't sit down in the best place, lest one more honorable you than you is invited by him who invited you all, and he comes and says, hey, give this place to this guy, and then you'll be shamed as you have to take the lowest place. He says, when you're invited, go sit in the lowest place, so that when someone sees you, say, hey, what are you doing here? You need to be sitting up here. See, the idea is, in every aspect of our life, we ought to defer to others, forget about ourselves, honor others more than ourselves, and then the Lord will take care of us. But if we're looking out for ourselves, it's pride, and eventually we'll be embarrassed by that. It'll catch up to us. We're so worried about our appearance, you know, what people think of us. There's an illustration. The Smiths were proud of their family tradition. Their ancestors had come to the America on the Mayflower. They traced it all the way back. They included senators and Wall Street people in their family line, and they decided to compile this family history, a legacy for their children. They hired this author who did some research, but he found a problem. They had one great-great uncle, George, who was executed in the electric chair. Well, this was kind of a stain in their family line, and they didn't quite know how to deal with it. They had to include him. It would not be truthful if they didn't. But they figured, maybe we can phrase this in a way that will be a little more appealing. So in the final edition, it appeared like this. Great Uncle George occupied a chair of applied electronics at an important government institution and was attached to his position by the strongest of ties, and his death came as a great shock. That's not being fully honest. That's worried about what people think. But boy, that is an addiction for many of us. What do people think? The integrity, however, of the upright will guide them. Verse 3. But the perversity of the unfaithful will destroy them. There is a safe guidance system for every one of us that's available, and that is being a person of integrity. Now, in the Hebrew, the word is an interesting word. The word is tuma, and it means simplicity. It means singleness of purpose, innocence. It's the opposite of duplicity. It's simplicity. Duplicity would be, to be duplicitous, would be one who says one thing in one way, but in another way he's acting another way. He's playing the hypocrite. He's playing both sides. You really never get the honest, straight answer. But the key for us as Christians is integrity, and that's a guidance system. However, when you deviate, perversity is going different directions. It's both duplicitous and a variety of ways that a person would choose. It will eventually destroy them. You know, when we look out for ourselves and we end up playing, you know, dishonest with things, our ulterior motive comes in. Eventually it leads to destruction. It leads to losing everything we'd hoped for. But with the integrity, you see, it's a great thing. There are certain things in our lives that should be non-negotiable, that you shouldn't even have to think about when the temptation comes. You shouldn't have to think this, well, gee, should I or shouldn't I? Certain things in your mind should be so clear that there is no other option. You don't have to think about it at the time, because you know ahead of time what your decision will be. I know temptation comes to us all, but how do I respond when that temptation comes? Joseph was a man of integrity. He ran. How can I sin against God? He got out of there. And I need to know ahead of time my reaction to a number of temptations. I don't want to dilly-dally. I don't want to sit there and think about it and wonder, well, gee, should I or shouldn't I? Or let's see, let me work out the pros and cons here. Let me write them down. No, there's sometimes when you need to run. You need to get out of there. You need to make a quick decision. But you need to know ahead of time. Integrity, it's being on the up and up. And the key for us as Christians especially is making those decisions. You know, a lot of times people think about religion, well, I'm 99% there, you know, I'm not quite there. Well, it doesn't mean that, you know, we're going to be perfect on this side of eternity. But we should have this mindset that I want to be 100% there. I want 100% of myself to be in the Lord's hands. And if it's not, then I've missed the mark, and I want to be dependent upon Him for His grace and mercy, forgiveness, to get back on track and not lose heart and lose hope. You know, you'll never, ever make it to heaven on your own merit, because none of us are good enough. None of our righteousness, no matter how good we are, could make it. But when He is working in us, you see, the integrity that's built in us makes us more and more like Jesus. I saw this interesting, you know, comparison as this company was trying to encourage their workers to strive for 100% excellence in their work. And there was a thing that said 99% is not good enough. He says if 99% were good enough, that would mean 466,000 annual takeoffs and landings of commercial airplanes in the United States could end in tragedy. If 99% were good enough, 12 newborns would be given to the wrong parents daily. If 99% were good enough, 114,000 mismatched pairs of shoes would be shipped each year. 18,000 pieces of mail would be mishandled every hour. 2 million documents would be lost by the IRS this year. Yippee! But seriously, if 99% were good enough, those would be the margins for error. 20,000 incorrect drug prescriptions could be written this year if 99% were good enough. I think it's all of us should have the heart that if the world strives for 100%, and it certainly does a lot better than 99% in each of these areas, then we ought to, as Christians, say, Lord, here's my life. I want integrity to guide me, and it will guide you. It'll be a safeguard. Verse 4, riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. Riches are not going to do it. Ask the rich man that Jesus talked about in Luke 16. If all of his wealth that he'd accumulated is going to help him at all in that place of torments because he did not respond to the message of the Word of God. You know, when you consider that, understand, he goes on to say, the righteousness of the blameless will direct his way aright, as he just said in another way from verse 3, but the wicked will fall by his own wickedness. See, it's a funny thing about wickedness. It comes back, the very same thing that you sought to enjoy will be your problem. In a controverse way, or in the opposite way, the very thing that so often we as Christians want to avoid in the sense of, you know, trials and difficulties, and we're trying to avoid any pain, those things that when we do encounter them turn out to be good. So the problems in our lives turn out to be good when we're walking in righteousness, but the good sin that we thought, ooh, we're going to enjoy as a wicked person turns out to be the thing that will bring us down. The righteousness of the upright will deliver them, but the unfaithful will be caught by their own lust. So again, integrity is a guidance system. It delivers. The unfaithful are caught by their own lust. Boy, it's an amazing thing when you feed your lust, how it eventually is not content just to be satisfied. It takes control. When a wicked man dies, his expectation will perish. And the hope of the unjust perishes. All that they'd hoped for, all they desired, all that they dreamed about, gone. But the righteous is delivered from trouble, and it comes to the wicked instead. You know, this is an interesting thing. It's kind of like the very thing that was contrived against the righteous by the wicked ends up turning on their own head. You know, there's great examples in the Old Testament about this, that when you consider this, Israel was attacked by Egypt. They were meant to be destroyed as they came to attack them, but the Lord opened the Red Sea. And the very thing that was determined to happen to Israel by the Egyptians happened to the Egyptians by God. It came back upon their own head as they perished in the Red Sea. One of the classic examples is in the book of Esther. A guy by the name of Mordecai, a Jewish man in this kingdom of Persia, hated by this man Haman because he wouldn't bow and give Haman honor. And Mordecai wouldn't bow to anybody but God. So Haman devised a way to kill this man, erected these gallows way up in the air to hang him publicly. And as the whole story unfolds, guess who got hanged on the gallows? Haman, as his wicked plot was revealed. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the three Babylonian captives as they were being thrown into the fiery furnace, what happened? The men who threw them in died in the flames. And they, while they were in the flames, were joined by the Lord and preserved and came out, as the Bible describes, they didn't have their hair singed. There was not even the smell of smoke on them. They were totally preserved. And of course, Daniel in the lion's den, another case in point, as these liars and schemers got Daniel because of his righteousness to be thrown in the lion's den, he was preserved. And when he came out the next day, that king threw those men who set him up in, and the lions crushed them before they hit the ground. It's amazing what a picture. It says the righteous is delivered from trouble and it comes to the wicked instead. The hypocrite with his mouth destroys his neighbor, but through knowledge the righteous will be delivered. It's kind of an interesting contrast here. The hypocrite with his mouth does destroy his neighbor. You know, he pretends to be a friend to his neighbor, but in the meantime he's behind the scenes talking about him and he's dissing him. And yet, the righteous, through knowledge, will be delivered. That is, in the sense of, he's in the up and up. He's right out there in the front. There's no hypocrisy there. What you see is what you get. You always know where you stand with a righteous person. You know, if there is some displeasure or some problems, he is going to be faithful to speak to you gently about it. You always know where you stand. There's never a guess. When it goes well with the righteous, the city rejoices. But when the wicked perish, there's jubilation. What an interesting thing. The effect of the righteous. What happens? Destruction from the mouth. The city, however, is perishing. You know, the city is going through all kinds of trouble when the wicked are there. But when the wicked perish, there's a rejoicing. It's nothing worse than bad leaders who are making deals on the side, ripping off the public. And this happens every day. People take advantage of it as long as they don't get caught, but eventually they do get caught. And if they don't get caught in this life, they're going to stand before the Lord. But what a joy it is when righteous people are in office, people that are people of integrity. And it always surprises me that character and integrity are not that highly esteemed when voting day comes. People vote with their party because, well, I've always voted this way and my grandmother told me to vote this way. And so it's the way it's supposed to be. And they don't really pay attention to the character of the people they're voting for. I'm shocked sometimes when I think of the character issue, how little it was esteemed. We ought to be ashamed of Christians. We don't consider that the number one thing, because when the wicked are in charge, it's a groaning. But when there is a righteous in charge, when people are going to be faithful with their word, even if they may disagree with your policies, at least you know what you're getting. By the blessing of the upright, the city is exalted, but it is overthrown by the mouth of the wicked. So the effect of righteousness and integrity on a community very greatly affected. He who is devoid of wisdom despises his neighbor, but a man of understanding holds his peace. Now, verse 12 and 13 speak about the integrity of the tongue. In this respect, if you're devoid of wisdom, you're going to despise your neighbor. You're going to criticize. You're going to tear them down. You're going to see their weaknesses. And you know what? By nature, we all do that with others. We see easily. It's easy to see the negative. You have to force yourself to see the positive. I come home from work sometimes, and if I'm not really conscious that when I get home, I'm not ending my ministry. My ministry is still there. I've still got to be an example and be wise and pray for wisdom, because a variety of things can happen in the home. And if I come home and I'm not walking in the Spirit and I'm not prepared, it comes out very quickly in my words. As I see the negative, I see what's not done, or I see what's missing, and why didn't you do that? You can hear me sometimes. My wife says, if they could only hear you at church. I confess. Sometimes it's like that. And it's being devoid of wisdom. I'm not plugged in at that moment. You know, which is what wisdom is. I mean, you can be the most wise person one moment and an absolute fool the next. Because it's not a matter of what you can hold and contain. It's a matter of being plugged in to the Lord. But a man of understanding holds his peace. You know, you think before you speak. You wait. You consider it. You consider the effect of it. Is this going to really get my desired effect? Is my complaining and nagging going to really bring me the desired results? Oftentimes, no. And then verse 13, a talebearer reveals secrets. But he who is of a faithful spirit conceals a matter. What a great picture that is. The tale-bearer. You know, gossip is like a tasty trifle. It goes down into the inmost soul, the Bible says. And people are so apt to try to build their reputation on the ruins of others. You can learn a lot about people by how they hold someone else's reputation. How they speak of someone else. What they say of others. Do they hold confidences? You know, I tell you something. If someone tells you something in confidence and it gets around, that will become very quickly known about you. You don't hold confidences. And if a person is too interested in the details of someone else, be suspect of them. You know, my flesh is eager to know all the gory details. But you know what? I got to content myself not to know. I don't want to create a demand for information I don't need to know. And I can do that. I can create a demand. I can say, well, you know, I'm a pastor. You can tell me. See, I can use that one. But I refrain from that so often because, you know, every now and then I might need to know a situation in a very delicate way. But I don't need to know every detail. Because you know what? When it comes to this, it's like the faithful spirit is one who conceals a matter. He's not willing to spread out information. There was an Ann Landers column that was called The Gem of the Day. And it says, people of high intelligence talk about ideas. People of average intelligence talk about things. And people of no intelligence talk about other people. Where are you in the lineup? Pretty pointed question. But we're to be kindly affectionate to one another in brotherly love, giving preference to one another. Notice he goes on to say in verse 14, and here's some benefits of wise and gracious counsel. He who is surety for a stranger will suffer, but he who hates being surety is secure. Surety is a guarantee. To guarantee for a stranger would be very foolish. Why would someone do that? Why would you put up a bail for someone who you don't know them at all and they could run and you'll lose everything? Why would you guarantee or co-sign for someone that you don't know that well? It'd be foolish. But if you hate being surety, you're secure. You're not going to fall into that trap or be manipulated to be a guarantee for someone that is not trustworthy or that you don't know. Because you're removing the responsibility from their life. They need to be responsible. You know, to be a surety, to be a guarantee for them, removes the responsibility from them, and that might be the worst thing for them. A gracious woman retains honor, but ruthless men retain riches. You know, the contrast here between a gracious woman who, the key is that honor is going to come from that graciousness, like from Ruth and Esther and Sarah and Hannah, the women of the Bible that had that graciousness, honor comes. But ruthless men, they're only interested in riches, the temporary things that they can use to control people. But it won't last. It's temporary. The merciful man does good for his own soul, but he who is cruel troubles his own flesh. You want to do good to yourself? Be merciful to others. Be gracious. Give people the benefit of the doubt. Be a gracious, merciful person, and it will be a blessing to you. The wicked man does deceptive work, but he who sows righteousness will have a sure reward. What are you sowing is the question. You know, a sure reward is a blessing. Jesus says, behold, I'm coming quickly, and my reward is with me. I think of how close we are as Christians. I mean, Jerusalem right now is a powder keg. It is so volatile. Anything can happen. We're very, very close. And I'll tell you what, when the Lord returns, the bottom line is how many of our plans are going to be nothing? They won't mean anything. So what are we doing on, for heaven's sake, on earth? What are we doing now for eternity's sake? Because His way is a sure reward. Righteousness will have a sure reward. As righteousness leads to life, so he who pursues evil pursues it to his own death. You know, you go to life, righteousness, it's life. When you go after evil, eventually you're pursuing it to your own ruin and death. Those who are of a perverse heart are an abomination to the Lord. See, they're not single of mind. They're perverse. They're going to go their own way, any which way they want. But notice, the blameless in their ways are his delight. Integrity. Though they join forces, the wicked will not go unpunished. You know, in the last days, they're going to join forces. There's going to be a world empire. in opposition to the rule of God. And though they joined forces and they put everything together, I remember listening to a Pink Floyd album when I was in high school, greatly influenced by that genre of music, and just in my drug days, my own little world. And I remember a little phrase that came on one of the albums, you could barely make out it unless you had like headphones, you could listen to the end of the song. And there was a statement that says, "We'll make the bugger's eyes water." And it was the call of the whole world to come together, and we're going to fight against God and we're going to give him a black eye. And I remember how greatly impacted that made me. It made me feel like, yeah, we all gang together. We don't need God. I could tell you, my grandmother prayed hard because my mindset was in the wrong direction. It was out there. And I just thank God for the mercy that he showed me. But though the wicked join forces, they're not going to go unpunished. But the posterity of the righteous will be delivered. What a great promise you can have for your children. Through your example, you can set a foundation in your children that they will run to that when they get into trouble and their difficulties in their life. And then my famous verse 22? No. As a ring of gold and a swine's snout, so is a lovely woman who lacks discretion. That's a good verse, though. It really is. Because, there's a lot of very, very beautiful women being touted in the media these days. Unfortunately, how they're famous and how they present themselves is so wrapped up in pornography. It's so wrapped up in the revealing, the sensual. How many thousands and thousands of young women are being encouraged to expose themselves and be used in these types of films, and it just blows my mind. And here's a young, beautiful girl that... The next thing you know, she gets older. She makes decisions to sell her body. Lacking discretion. It's like having a pig with a gold ring in his snout. What good is that? Gold ring loses its luster because the lack of discretion colors everything else. And I think we as men have to be ashamed that we allow ourselves to be attracted because of the physical. We need to see through the person. I'll tell you one way that men can overcome that addiction to looking at beautiful women in a lustful manner is if you begin to pray for them and pray for their souls. It's hard to lust and pray at the same time. It really is. Hard to take something from someone at the same time when you're concerned about their soul. Concern over their soul will take all the fun out of the sin. It'll let sin be seen for what it is. The desire of the righteous is only good, but the expectation of the wicked is wrath. Where is it all going to end? There's sure reward for the righteous, but it's all going to end horribly for the wicked. Verse 24. There is one who scatters, yet increases more. And there is one who withholds more that is right, but it leads to poverty. The generous soul will be made rich, and he who waters will also be watered himself. The people will curse him who withholds grain, but blessing will be on the head of him who sells it. In these three verses, you see a picture of generosity here, but more than generosity with resources, it's an idea of a generous soul who's not thinking of himself. A generous person generally gets delight out of blessing others, seeing joy in others, and helping others. And because they've learned the secret, it is more blessed to give than receive. You see, as long as we're directed inward and I need and I want and I'm holding on to the things for myself and I'm very stingy at how I'm going to bless others, I'm miserable, like a miser. Let it go. Let it go. If the Lord has blessed you, be a channel of his blessing, and you know what? That channel will increase. But if you bottleneck it down and you just... a lot is coming in, but just a little is squeezed out very, stingily. Eventually, you're not going to have any joy. You're going to be a curse to people. You're going to be not watered yourself. There's going to be misery. And you're holding more than is right. And it leads to poverty. But the generous soul, one who scatters, increases more. It's a paradox. It's like you give out, you can't give too much. So the Lord sees your heart. There is such a joy in giving. The generous soul will be made rich. You know, I've often heard, you know, how these rich people got rich. They held on to every penny. They didn't let it go. So they got rich. But the real twist of fate is, did they really get rich? Did they really enjoy what they had? Could they really enjoy the use of their things? Because it all ended with themselves. I submit to you, they were in a prison that they made for themselves. But there's a blessing upon the head of him who is just available. He's not looking for, you know, himself. He who earnestly seeks good finds favor, but trouble will come to him who seeks evil. By the way, on the generosity thing, Jesus did say, "Give and it shall be given to you, good measure pressed down and shaken together, running over, shall men give unto you. For the same measure that you mete out will be measured back to you." When you seek good, you find favor, but trouble comes to him who seeks evil. What are you seeking? You know, this is kind of like what goes around comes around. You know, are you seeking evil? You know what? You're going to find it. It's very easily found. You can go out there and a few moments' time, you can find sin. But when you seek good, you got favor. Only trouble when you seek evil. He who trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like foliage. He who troubles his own house will inherit the wind, and the fool will be servant to the wise of heart. You know, you've got that inner sanctum of your home. And there are many attacks that come to the home because Satan is busy trying to sow discord, try to mess with our minds and our hearts. And he wants to mess us up in those areas. He really attacks the home. You shouldn't be surprised when, for no reason at all, you get irritable toward your mate or you're frustrated or you overreact to your kids. And these things start to come up because Satan loves to trouble it. But when you start going down that road, when you enjoy that and you go forward with that pride and that arrogance instead of humility and doing what's right for your family, you're only going to inherit the wind. It's going to be fruitless to you. And the fool will be servant to the wise of heart. In the end, it's the way it's going to be. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life. And he who wins souls is wise. I've looked at this two ways, this verse. It takes wisdom to win souls. But the one whose focus is on winning souls, it comes from wisdom. See, when you win souls, when you're seeking souls, because that which is eternal is so much more valuable than all the gold and silver in the world. You know, think about where you spend your time. Outline it on a piece of paper. How much time do you spend just taking care of the things of this world? And how much time do you allow for things that are eternal? That is, in your own activities and reaching and praying for others and trying to speak to others about their soul, or in giving to those mission opportunities that God has used, called individuals that are going to be effective in that. And though you can't all be sent goers, but you can be senders. But how much of a priority is that? See, the fruit of the righteous is a tree of life. The fruit comes and it's an expanding thing that brings life to many. And he who wins souls is wise. There is no greater reward than this. And he concludes this whole thought, if the righteous will be recompensed on the earth. And we are recompensed on the earth. We're recompensed in a few ways. Jesus said, no man has left father or mother, or, you know, house or lands for my name's sake that won't regain many more in this life and in the life to come. In this life, there is a gain. Some of you maybe even lost your family in coming to the Lord Jesus. They rejected you. They thought you were in a cult. They thought you'd left their family religion and now you're way out there and you rejected them. And so they rejected you. Yet you gained many more brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers. And you have eternity to look forward to. You have been recompensed on the earth. But you're also recompensed in discipline. When you go your own way and you do something that's wrong because you're God's child, he's going to be faithful to discipline you. You're recompensed in that way. And I have a healthy fear for being recompensed in that way. I don't want to do something that's displeasing to my Father. But how much more will the ungodly and the sinner be recompensed in this life and in the life to come? It's like in this life, it's a hard life for the wicked. But in the life to come, it's eternity in torments and sorrows. So the integrity of the righteous will guide them. You know, there is a safety, there's a guidance that comes from just being that person in simplicity of heart, following Jesus, letting Him expose the sin in my life so that I can turn it over to Him, repent of it, and follow Him with a full heart, a clean heart, and not a duplicitous heart. Not a hypocrisy, but a singular mind of saying, Lord, here am I, here's my life, use me.